It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here, as usual, in the studio on yet another beautiful Northeast Florida day. A little less chilly than yesterday.
Yeah, and surprisingly, a bunch warmer. It was cold yesterday afternoon.
I noticed that the temperature rose overnight, which was good because had it gone the other way, I would have been very unhappy. We don't want that.
No.
Just not a good idea. Anyway, I welcome all the regulars who are, you're always there. That means we're always here. As long as you guys keep hanging around, we'll be happy to keep the show going on and on. And if you're new, just found it either by accident or on purpose, then stick around for the hour. And I virtually always promise that you'll learn something in that hour. If you want to listen to what we want to talk about, you can do that for an hour. But if you would rather talk about something you'd like to talk about, it's easy. You can take control by picking up a phone and dialing 904-222-TALK or 222-8255, and we'll discuss what it is that you would like to discuss. And as usual, a reminder that the show is presented by Strivus Wealth Partners. And next week, the new partner, Joey, will be with me here in the studio while Adam's out of town. And we'll get a little different perspective than that which we get frequently. And we're all pretty much compatible with the way we think.
Pretty much, yeah.
Pretty much. But he's younger than you, and you're younger than I am. So we're getting generational differences. And I'm always curious to see what the younger generation thinks, because you know, my opinions are pretty much known and pretty much all formed. And with the younger people, that's not so much. So I'm kind of looking forward to that, actually. He'll be doing this once in a while to just, you know, get involved, stay involved, and hopefully just a lot of times to back up Adam. So his schedule, he's got a couple of pretty active kids, and one of them's starting the college thing now. So they got to do some traveling to get their lives ready to go.
Yep, we're actually doing that this weekend while we're down in Orlando for soccer, but we're going to go check out UCF while we're there, and yeah, it should be a fun trip.
Mm-hmm. And I remember going through all that many years ago with you.
Well,
it was mostly a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is. You learn a lot about what's out there and what your choices are, and at that, if anyone can make an intelligent decision at age 17. You have to at least get all the information before you try to. I do find it, looking back, it's a little ridiculous asking a 17-year-old to make these life-altering decisions, but that's the system.
That it is. And, of course, they have filters.
Yeah, of course. The parents, of course.
But they, you know, the one thing I noticed with all of you guys, we put all three through school for the original years, you have to go somewhere where you're comfortable.
Yeah.
It's got to feel good. And we have walked onto some places that you would classify as being really, really nice.
But you just didn't have
feeling
a fit.
Wasn't there.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And then you walk into another one, it may look like 10 others that you've been to, but it feels right.
Yeah, it's true. I just talked to another parent friend of mine, and his son was wanted to go to UF for his entire life. And had the full ride Florida plan is. And then he went to go visit Davidson, this tiny college in North Carolina. And he didn't want to tell his parents because he felt like he was letting them down because they're huge Gator fans. But he really just wanted to go to Davidson. He loved it. He just felt at home.
Huh.
And so he told them, and they were very supportive and said, well, if that's how you feel, then that's what you should do, and sent him there, much to the chagrin of his dad's pocketbook. But it was, that's just kind of how it works out.
We're getting off subject a bit. I tend to digress once in a while, but we had a friend back in Wisconsin whose kid received a full ride to Pepperdine. And he had a girlfriend in Wisconsin. So instead of going on the full ride to Pepperdine, he stayed home to be with his girlfriend. They broke up shortly thereafter, and he called Pepperdine, tried to get in. They said no.
It was an athletic scholarship, and that ship had sailed.
That ship had sailed. I laugh about that story all the time, but I'm sure his parents didn't.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, very funny. Anyway. Here we are back again. There's so much going on in the world out there. And I feel like I say that every week. I feel like it's true every week. But some weeks are even goofier than other ones. And this one was a big one. And the market didn't take it lying down. And nobody knows for sure when we have a couple of sell-off days like we did at the end of that. It's very strange because they were coming off a new record high for the S&P.
Yeah, that's the funny thing about this week is that Tuesday and Wednesday saw record highs.
Yeah. And what happened overnight? I have no idea.
You know, that's just how it goes. I don't think you can honestly point to one thing that caused Friday. It was just a general, the market is high by most measures. If you look at PE ratios, if you look at where it's come from the last 2 years, I mean, just in general, it feels high. And all it takes is one bit of bad news, whether that was there were several things that came out. We saw the ISM services index drop into contraction territory for the first time since 2023. Yep. We saw inflation data last week that was pretty terrible. I don't know that you can point to one thing, but sometimes the market just happens that you see a really ugly day. And once that starts, people tend to pile on, as you say, the elevator down and the stairs up. It just happens.
Yeah, and the Fed minutes said exactly what the Fed said.
Yeah, there was no surprises there.
And then people say, oh, no.
Yeah.
Actually, weren't you listening, people?
If you read the tea leaves, though, around the Fed right now, I would almost argue there's more incentives for them to do a rate cut than stay the same or do a rate hike. So it's either stay the same or a cut. But all these rumors of a hike are, I think, very exaggerated.
The economy is not that strong.
It's not.
Yet.
No. And I have some pretty good evidence of that I'll get to after the break because we're about a minute and a half away. So, but yeah, it was just one of those days. Oh, the other thing was Walmart, of all things. They had a great quarter.
Yes.
They really smashed it in the fourth quarter, but their outlook was just awful. And I don't know what they're seeing.
I don't either.
That maybe we're not seeing, but why would people go from shopping at Walmart in droves in the fourth quarter and then in the first quarter of this year, they're just going to stop? Like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
No. And on that, along with that announcement, was the simple fact that for the fourth quarter, Amazon sales were higher than Walmart's for the first time in history.
That's interesting.
Isn't it?
I didn't see that.
Yeah. It was a big number for Amazon, too. All in all, things are very good out there. But I do not have any clue what Walmart is getting at.
I mean, maybe it's the threat of China tariffs on their goods that they're importing.
I think that's part of it. I think
there's nothing's happened there yet.
No, though. I think they're looking at maybe having to have a rolling cost increase thing.
Maybe.
And that's just not going to happen. I've talked about this before, but you're going to see the dollar change value, and you're going to see a lot of the exporters that become importers when they come over here, you're going to see a lot of things change in there too, where they're going to absorb some of it. I don't think anything is really carved in stone about how big the tariffs are going to be. And there's a good question as to whether or not they're even really tariffs. More in just a minute. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are going to continue with our market wrap in just a moment. But first, I want to remind everybody that we have, as usual, a trivia question brought to us by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. Call Paul at 904-636-7888. Residential or commercial does not matter. All right. And had an interesting week in the market, as I mentioned. And there's a piece of kind of interesting data that came out of that I think everybody will find interesting today. There are 11 sectors, by most people's reckoning, in the S&P 500 index. Year to date, 7 of those are not only up, they're up over 5%. The market itself, not so much, but 7 of 11 sectors are up over 5%. There have been 11 other instances of that phenomenon, and 10 of those times, the S&P had a strong finish for the rest of the year. What was the median gain on those years for the balance of the year? And I'll take any percent number. You can put a decimal on it if you want, but I've got a little range to do it. And I think you'll see what the impact of the question is once everybody either gets it right or listens to the end, and I have to tell you. All right, so anyway, back in the market, the earnings season was very interesting, and I'm sure Adam will touch on that and a few other things before we wrap this up. So take it away.
Yeah, I just wanted to go back to the overall markets first. The S&P was down 1.7%. The Dow and the NASDAQ were off 2.5%, and all three are still positive for the year. NASDAQ is up 1.1%, and the Dow and the S&P are up 2.1%. So honestly, it really hasn't – it's been a good couple months overall, and Friday didn't change that.
We did mention volatility at the beginning of this year.
We did, and I've been saying it
we've been right
for the last 2 months.
Yeah.
The S&P is still in a pretty well-defined up channel with a series of higher highs, and it ended trading on Friday right at its 50-day moving average. So that means from a technical perspective, if you do charting, this week really didn't do much damage. What happens next is what really determines if this is the start of something bigger or just normal market movement. So we'll have to see what happens next week. One indicator that this might just be normal trading is that we really haven't seen any kind of spike in the VIX. It's right now it's around 16, and not until it hits over 20 is there even considered to be rising concern.
Volatility index, for those of you who didn't catch
that. Yeah, that's right. Over 25 is where you're in, you know, real market turbulence. So we're really nowhere near that right now. This is considered – it's actually at the low end of normal market range. So I know we haven't seen much volatility recently, so it feels bad, but this is pretty normal.
Yeah, we got spoiled. It goes way back into the early Trump years that we got so spoiled by not seeing the kind of daily volatility that is normal in history. So now that we're back to it, people are still kind of like, well, I liked it before when it just kept going up.
Yeah, and, you know, I'll take my 100 points a day and call it a day.
Exactly.
That's not really how it works normally. One good thing is historically years that start out with gains tend to be good years. So if it follows the pattern that it's been on for the last 2 months, we could be in good shape. One area of the economy that is not doing well, though, is housing. 7% interest rates have been very sticky, even with the yields dropping across the yield curve. Housing starts dropped 9.8% month over month, with 8.4% in the single family area and 13.5% on the multifamily units. So that's not great. Some of it was weather related, but it's still a pretty big number. And one interesting and scary thing that I have realized is that a recession has always followed a downturn in housing starts, but it can take a really long time for that recession to come. Not always, but it can. Starts have fallen from 1.67 million to about 1.3 million, and we've now gone 33 months without hitting a 52-week high on that index. That's the fifth longest streak on record, and that weakness is really translating into home builder stocks too. The S&P is up over 5% in the last 4 months, while the home builder index is down 30%. That is not great for home builders or for the housing market. So,
nor is it good news for an inflation rate that's waiting for rents to fall, because that's holding the inflation rate.
All of this is in the backdrop of historic underbuilding for the last 15 years.
Yep.
So, it's a very odd situation to be in. We continue to underbuild in this country, and yet demand looks like it's fairly weak. Although those two things shouldn't be, it doesn't add up. So that's the situation we're in.
Yeah, that to me, it speaks very poorly for the home prices for young people. That we're not going to fix this problem of pricing and availability
without more units available.
Exactly.
Yeah. Although the months of inventory on market has come up substantially. Yeah. So there is more inventory available than there has been. People just aren't buying it. I think many people are probably waiting for interest rates to come down, which may or may not happen. In January, we saw the ISM manufacturing index move back into expansion territory for the first time in 2 years. So that's kind of crazy. But I mentioned it earlier. At the same time, we saw the services index move into contraction territory, which has been up for 2 years. So who knows what's going on? That's a really interesting switch in the economy right at a kind of crucial time. So that there's another data point that it's hard to know exactly what's going on there. But it's not necessarily great news. I do like that manufacturing is expanding again, but off of a pretty low base. But seeing the services index dip into contraction is a bit scary as well.
Now, there are some weather-related blips in these numbers, I'm pretty sure.
It does affect it, sure.
We've had a winter so far.
Yeah, it has been across, even in Florida.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Earnings season wrapped up this week, as I mentioned, with the Walmart report, and it was a really good one. 71% of companies beat their earnings forecasts and 66% beat on revenue. And that's all well above historical averages and the best quarter of 2024. So I give you all this negative news and then I tell you what's actually happening with companies. Yeah. And it's great news.
And guidance is negative.
Yeah, guidance is negative. I still think that's heavily influenced by the uncertainty around Trump.
And I think Walmart's announcement was very heavily influenced by those numbers too. They don't want to stand out.
It had to be.
Yeah. I honestly don't believe they have any business in their own minds of saying, well, what's wrong with all of you? We're doing great. Then if it doesn't happen.
Yeah. It is the incentive structure in public reporting like this is to under promise and over deliver.
That's why a lot of companies quit doing it.
Yeah, it's true. Well, it's to the extent they can.
Yeah.
You have to report. You don't have to give guidance.
Right. And I think there are some other big companies that might be easing up on the guidance too. But you know, and I know CEOs are not going to get overly optimistic and get caught when the next earnings season comes or their jobs are in jeopardy.
It's true.
So, yeah, take all of this with not a grain of salt, but a small sandbox, I guess, and just keep watching what's going on. The best way you can tell what's going on in the economy is when you're out running around, see how many parking lots are full and how many restaurants have lines out the door. Yeah, people are out there.
Yeah.
They're spending money.
It may have improved. And by improve, I mean maybe be slightly less crowded out than it was 6 months ago, but not really. I mean, it's still really crowded,
yeah.
At least where we live. So I don't know. That's tough to get a read on. There hasn't been an extreme shift in the status quo there.
Yeah, and the price of things continues to rise, albeit a little more slowly. But I think we were mentioning last week, it used to be on a daily basis. You could walk into the grocery store and say, oh, my God. And now what you paid last week is probably what you pay this week, except for eggs. And
there's always any commodity you look at is going to fluctuate in price. And eggs are no exception. Coffee is also very high. But, again, it's a commodity that has multiple things factored into that price. So, overall, I don't see the inflation that we did a few years ago.
No, and the politics of the situation right now, everybody's complaining because inflation hasn't fallen yet. The price of gas hasn't fallen yet. 22 days or 32 days in office, a month, and he doesn't even have a full cabinet yet. The legislature hasn't passed anything yet. And all this politicking that's going on against Trump and the economy and so on is not helping anybody either. So it's just silly season all over again.
Yeah. We are headed. This is the time of year where gas prices traditionally start to rise. So there's that as well. But the expectation to curb inflation in a very short period of time is that's just not how it works. It took us over a year to get from 9 to 3 percent. So, that's how things move in economics.
Also, on an interesting note, the saving rate in the country has gone back to positive.
Yeah, I just read a report that there's more 401k millionaires than there ever have been before.
and people are adding more to their plans. They're adding more to their IRAs. And in general, they're starting to restore their cash supplies, which means, of course, that that's done at the expense of the 70% consumer-driven economy. The more you save instead of spend, the worse the economy looks. And it's you can't say it's all good or all bad that these things are happening, but until everybody's got a nice little cash savings, you know, fire only type thing, or you know, whatever you want to use it for, then we need to change. We'll be right back. Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
I remind everybody that the lines are open, 904-222-8255. And the trivia question is out there. In years that start out like this, with seven of the 11 sectors of the S&P up over 5% in the first couple of months, that usually leads to very strong rest of the year results. What is the median amount of increase that we find on those, well, 11 occasions when we've had this kind of a start to the year? Just a percentage of some sort. And I'm going to make it easy to you. I already did, essentially. It is generally up. 10 out of 11 were up, and I'm talking about being up. So don't take that as I'm trying to fool you, just because once in a while you know I'll do that. Not this time. All right, you're going to hear an opinion now from both of us that you're probably going to question, and many of you are probably not going to like. Everyone has been following Doge. You can't not be knowing all about it. It's everywhere, it's everywhere in your face, yeah. And TV, radio, everywhere. And I think it's a wonderful thing. It, in fact, it's led to one of my all-time favorite things. You know, Hakeem Jeffries, the minority leader in the House, has dubbed, this shows you how bad these people are as politicians, he's labeled Trump King Chaos. Okay. And everybody I know that's heard that says, that's great.
Yeah, I kind of like it.
Yeah, that's exactly what this world needs, is some chaos in D.C. where everything's way too predictable. Well, one of the things that Elon Musk threw out the other day was, well, if we're going to cut all this money, why don't we share some of it with the taxpayers? So he's proposing rebate payments of $5,000 per taxpayer. Taxpayer can be a single or a household, depending on how you file. And, of course, everybody says, wow, $5,000 would be cool. We've overpaid and all that. And our opinion, like I say, it might surprise a few of you, is that no, it is a terrible idea, and I will back it up. Not only that, but I will also present a solution at the end of this, because it's not fair just to complain about everybody else's ideas without having a better one, and I do. So here's the argument from our side, my side anyway. I just found out that Adam agrees with me, but I'm sure his logic and mine won't be the same.
It was a little different, but I did like what you said.
Okay. This is not your money. You may think it's your money. You may believe it's your money. They may tell you it's your money. This is not your money. Quite the opposite, in fact. This is your debt. When we all collectively place our hard-earned in the U.S. Treasury on April 15th, we don't pay for the whole spending plan for the year. We pay about $5 trillion, and they spend about $7 trillion. The other $2 trillion has to come from somewhere. The places it comes from include borrowing, whether it's from China or anybody else, and even from our own people. If you buy a government bond, they're borrowing money from you. Now, it also comes from the very convenient Federal Reserve, which has a very convenient printing press that doesn't even burn through ink because it's all done electronically, according to Ben Bernanke. He was so proud of that. And I got enough, I could talk about that for the rest of the show, but I won't. So what it really is to you, that last $2 trillion, which includes all this discretionary stuff that's being called out by Musk and his group and tossed out, that reduces borrowing. That is not your money. It is your debt that he's cutting back. There's a longstanding problem, we've talked about it over and over, that the way you get things done in D.C. is you take two terms that mean totally different things and you interchange them often enough that everybody's confused. So when Musk and Trump say we want to return 20% to the shareholders, they're wrong about that. It didn't come from the shareholders. It came from borrowing or printing. And they want to do 20% down on the debt. You can't. You can't pay a nickel on the debt unless you borrow the nickel to place down on the debt.
You have to erase your deficit before you can start attacking your debt.
Yeah, when your treasury bill comes due and they give you the money, they borrowed it to give it to you, the net debt is the same. The only way you can get out of debt, this is for individuals, families, governments, whatever it is, there is only one way to get out of debt. You have to take in more revenue than you put out in expenses. The government doesn't do that, ever. They sort of did it in the 90s when Newt was in there. Because of their strange accounting system being all cash, if they borrow money from Social Security, which they did because it was showing a surplus back then, and put it against everything else, it comes out that the budget was balanced. It wasn't really. Because Social Security was about to turn over and everybody knew it. So that was smoke and mirrors, but at least it made the point that somewhere along the line, we have to balance the budget. Well, this money, the $1.8 trillion that's currently estimated to be overspent today, is not your money, and you don't deserve it back because it'll just put us $5,000 per taxpayer in debt, right back where we were, and we're trying to get rid of it. That doesn't work.
This is to make an analogy. This is like when your significant other comes back from shopping and says, and you ask, well, how much did you spend? And they say, no, look how much I saved you. And you look at it and it's like, okay, so compare this product at $500 and you only paid $300. Okay, so you saved me $200. That's great. Why don't you give me that $200? And wait for the look on their face when you ask for that $200 savings back. Mm-hmm. And they realize that it wasn't a savings. It just was something that didn't get spent.
And there's an old version of that that I heard a long time ago. This guy walks in very late from work. And his wife looks at him and says, where you been? He said, well, I saved $2 and didn't take a bus and walked home. She said, well, you're an idiot. Why didn't you save $20 and not take a taxi? Does that work?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, yes, all that is very, very true, and it's very misleading. A deficit is how much money we overspend this year. You can reduce the deficit by not spending this year or by taking in more money. The debt is every single deficit on every single fiscal year, which for the government, it ends on September 30th. So every September 30th, all the overspending for the last 12 months is piled on this pile of IOUs that we call the national debt. So if we overspend $1.8 trillion this year, and the debt is $36 trillion, it'll be $36 trillion plus $1.8 trillion. That'll be the new debt on October 1st. That's how it works, and it isn't going to change. You cannot stop spending by spending.
Yep, that's right. And our reasoning was very much the same, just from different angles. I just look at a $5,000 check to everyone and say, okay, that's going to be inflationary. Mm-hmm. But really, the reason that it's inflationary is because it will have to be printed because we haven't reduced the deficit by enough that we have a surplus year over year.
Yeah, and those of you who are familiar with our show enough probably know who Lane is. And he just sent me a text and said, if you get the $5,000, will you cash it?
Heck yes.
I was thinking, hell yes. Before you get there, I'm going to.
Yeah.
I'll do it electronically the second it hits the mailbox. Thank you very much.
Exactly. I mean, you have to deal with the circumstances you're given.
Exactly.
And in that case, I'm definitely cashing the check.
All right. I promised a better idea. I've got a better idea. About 27% of the land mass that is the United States of America is owned by the federal government, i.e. by us, the citizens. We own the federal government. Federal government owns the land. About 92% of that land is in the western states. Much of it sits on top of what Trump calls liquid gold. It oil, but not just oil. We're talking just mountains of resources that can be for coal, that can be rare earth metals, it can be oil, it can be gas. They're assets. They are your assets. Assets owned by the federal government are owned by the owners of the federal government. The Fed is not part of the government. You don't own it. Other people do. I don't want to get my money from the Fed. I don't want them printing money that's just going to enrich the owners of the Fed, not the government, i.e. not us. I want to get it from assets. So I say, let's do what Trump has been proposing and open up a lot of new federal lands to drilling, exploration, mining, and all those things. We, the people, cannot take those resources out of the ground. We need help in the form of mining companies and oil companies and so on. And that which is extracted from the ground, we should sell to those people who can then process it, turn around, and resell it. Of the proceeds of the selling of these assets that we own, let's share some with the owners, us. You want a $5,000 check? I'm all for it, but get it from oil, get it from gas, get it from gold and silver, get it from rare earth metals, get it from anything that is under the ground and in mineral rights that we all own anyway. That's your money, and if they give it back to you, I'm all in. I'll cash that one even faster. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we will go to the phones immediately, and this appears to be some perhaps new caller to our show. Good morning, BW.
Well, good morning. How are you gentlemen doing?
Excellent. And you?
Yes, sir. I'm blessed every morning I wake up, sir.
Right. Same way I feel.
So what's sir.
What's on your mind?
I'm interested in the difference between, I am not a computer guy. I'm a baby boomer. I'm probably a couple of years older than you. But I don't have a computer. Like I said, I'm not hooked up to the outside world like that. But I do have this phone. My son says I can use it anyway, but I don't. I use it like this. It's a phone.
They nice. Still do that, huh? They still yes. work for that? That's amazing.
I couldn't get you on my landline. I swear.
Really?
Yes, sir. It just wouldn't go through, so I had to resort to this phone.
Okay.
We'll have Roger look into that.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to ask our producer to look into that for next week and see if there's some reason for that.
Well, it might be just I live out here in Green Cove, so.
Maybe.
Anyhow, the difference between wills and trust online mm-hmm. compared to, I guess, do you sit in front of a lawyer or someone like you? Because my son was interested in making sure I get something done here quickly, and I postponed, and I know I should.
Okay, we can't do it. We are not licensed to do that kind of work. We can advise you on it, and I will advise you right now that he's right.
It's a good idea. Yeah.
It's a very good idea.
But as far as using online versus going to a trust attorney, it's really up to you. And I think you should measure it based on how complicated your situation is. If you have mostly assets that will pass outside of probate, and those would be things like 401k, IRA, things that have a beneficiary designation on them already. So if you've already designated money to go to someone after your passing, then if that's the bulk of your money, then you can probably get away with an online will. If you have a complicated situation in any way, then I would strongly suggest stepping up to a trust. And if you don't feel comfortable with doing a trust online, which is a legitimate way to do it these days, but if you are not comfortable with that, then I would definitely go see a lawyer to help you out. And so I think you'll know pretty quickly if you start using the online software whether or not it's appropriate for your situation.
Yes, sir. Well, that'd be up to my son because, like I said, I wouldn't do it. I won't do it. But lawyers, are they just Are they trustworthy? I was going to see a gentleman, Brandon. He passed away 2 years ago. Bless his heart. I listened to him like you for years. Joe Pippin.
Oh yeah, we knew Joe very well. Good friend of ours, and we're very sad to see him.
In fact, he did our wills and trusts.
Yeah, for many of our for ourselves and our clients. But he had a very good firm built up, but they don't have a Jacksonville presence. So
But I was going. That's where my kids live. That I was going to travel and kill two birds with one stone while I was down there.
Anyhow,
he sent me a package, and it was very relatively for five different things: trust this, you know, your will, trust a few other things. I wasn't sure as far as these people out overpricing. That's all.
It can be expensive. But if you look around and read ask your son to read some reviews online and try and find someone who is highly rated and doesn't charge too much money. If you're looking for a trust, generally, I mean, the pricing's kind of all over the place. But for a single person, are you married or single?
No, I'm single now, sir. Yes.
Okay.
Sir,
no. So for a single person, I mean, it can be anywhere between $2,000 and $6,000, maybe more. But but in a simple, for if your situation isn't too complicated, I would really try and find something on the lower end of that.
Right.
With someone who's trustworthy, though, that is an important thing. Mm-hmm.
An elder law or estate law person was probably.
I heard on the radio last couple of weeks ago for an elder law.
Yes, there's one that does a show on the station, and I full disclosure, I don't know.
I don't know them either.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll check into that too. Yeah, Joe offered me a good price. So
yes, he was. One of the things we loved about him, he was always available for regular people at his prices,
and yes, sir.
Everything looked just as good as any other attorney I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And we miss him. We were just absolutely stunned when we were notified that he dropped dead.
Yes, sir.
What a shame.
I was too. So,
yeah.
Well, gentlemen, I want to detain you. I know somebody wants to win that.
You want to take a shot at it?
Oh, sir, you lost me. My pay grade is way below that.
Okay, but I have one answer for you. Roger came up with an answer. You know probably that the 904 that we all grew up in is not just the 904 anymore. There are two area codes in this area. So when you call a number like this, unless you've trained your phone to put that in, you have to dial the 904.
That could be.
And that's probably what was wrong.
Okay.
That's good information for everybody listening.
I'll give it another shot. Just tell them I was testing. How's that?
you got it.
We appreciate the call. Thank you.
In case you ask a question that I can answer.
Yeah. By the way, I just got an update from Roger. Says if you're on a landline, you also have to dial the 1-904.
You do, yeah. That's right.
Okay.
So you know. All right.
God bless you.
Well, same to you. Gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I need it. Bye-bye.
Thank
Don't
you.
Don't we all? Yeah, that's outstanding.
To that. Okay, I think we're good.
Yeah, it should be. Anyway, did we have anything we needed to wrap up here? You wanted to talk.
Yeah.
Oh, Adam, I knew how I wanted to introduce this one.
Okay.
Records were made to be broken.
That's
How's
right.
that?
And this one got broken by more than twice as good as the last one. And what I'm talking about is the world's biggest ever crypto heist happened just yesterday. The crypto exchange Bybit, has had a pretty staggering security breach. Somebody stole 1.5 billion in Ethereum coins. It's about 500,000 coins. And they've already been dispersed across multiple other wallets. Obviously, there is law enforcement involved, and they're watching the transactions. They're not sure if they can get it back. So the next biggest one prior to that was about $600 million stole from the Ronin network in 2022. The previous hacks are like this. They have not seen a very good chance of tracking it down and getting it back. So whoever that Ethereum belonged to they might be out of luck.
That is a lot of money.
That is a lot of money.
Yeah. You know, don't say we didn't warn you.
Yeah.
Right?
No doubt.
From day one, we said, if you think this is going to be secure, think again. There's also going to be some surprises by April 15th for some people who don't understand all the tax aspects of such things as the Bitcoin. And you know, it's just, it's complicated. And I promise you that almost everybody who gets into it knows very little about it.
How can you? It's not something you can easily understand.
No, you can look at the, quote, track record and how these things have gone up, but do you really know much about it? Maybe not. Also, some 1099 workers are going to get surprised, too, because the IRS has lowered the threshold for you having to receive a 1099 quite a bit. And it's going down again, and by next year it'll be only $6,000, I think, or $600, I mean. But a lot of people are going to be getting 1099s. The last of the 1099s, at least in Schwab, where I pay attention, are due out Friday, the 28th of February. Mm-hmm. So you can still get 1099s now and probably ongoing for a week or two. And you might be surprised that you're getting some from people you did some business with that you never got a 1099 before. It doesn't mean anything if you're paying taxes on your money anyway, but if you've been, shall we say, forgetting a few pennies here and there,
then it can be a little painful.
And you know, if you don't keep up on your quarterly payments and you're working independently, there are taxes and penalties involved in that too. So you look around and see, and if anybody thinks that it's a little bit worse this year, is going to be a lot worse next year. Mm-hmm. So be honest, and you'll never have to worry about those things. It's just paperwork if you're honest. All right. You know, I've been trying to slip in some little goodies lately about long-term care. I have a piece of good news that I've had to share with everybody. Genworth, if those of you who remember the old GE Insurance, they spun off years ago and became Genworth. Genworth had stopped writing new policies. They're honoring the ones that they had, but like most people, they were finding out that they were overpaying relative to the amount that came in. They were having to raise prices and still are. Well, they have been kind of reinventing their own share of the company and collecting money to form a new division. They're calling it Care Scout Insurance, and it will be a new subsidiary to go back into the business of writing long-term care policies. Hmm. This is what the insurance industry in this country, and especially in Florida, needs. New entrants into the supplier of the market create competition. Competition creates excellence. Excellence creates affordability. And people who are able to get long-term care insurance, it is so far better than any of the other products out there. Get it if you can, but get it young. Once you're 60, you're probably pushing it too late. So think about that, and we'll talk more about that over the next few weeks. We got to run. This went fast. Thanks for listening. We'll be back same time next week. This is the Banway Financial Hour.